Imagine your twin sister vanishes into thin air, leaving behind a trail of unanswered questions and a gaping void in your life. In order to figure out what happened to her, you decide to assume your sister's identity. That's the gripping premise behind our guest's debut novel, The Woman with Two Shadows. I recently had the pleasure of diving into this book, and I was hooked from the first page. It's a captivating tale set against a backdrop of World War II, filled with intrigue, suspense, and a touch of mystery that had me turning the pages well into the night. Her second book, Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen, which I cannot wait to read, is all about the glitz and glamours of the 1940s Hollywood, which, I mean, is there anything better? Of course, murder and mayhem lurk behind every red carpet, and Tinseltown's underbelly must be exposed to get to the truth. And all that sounds like a page-turner to me. And is as if that wasn't exciting enough, she's already had her third novel in the works, slated for release from Sourcebooks Landmark. And the premise and title may be under wraps still, but it's on my TBR, I'm telling you right now. We'll definitely want to get a sneak peek into that today. Our guest brings a unique blend of storytelling, skill, and a historical insight into her work that makes her story so compelling to me and to many readers. And I think it has something to do with her background. She has an MFA in writing from Screen and Television Program at USC and a BA in American Studies from Fordham University. So are you intrigued yet? Who's the mastermind behind these captivating tales, you ask? We are so pleased to welcome the ever-talented and internationally best-selling author Sarah James to our podcast. Sarah?
Thanks.
We are absolutely thrilled to have you here today.
Christine's been so excited.
I have been. I've been making like Angie crazy with like, Sarah's coming, Sarah's coming.
Yeah. No one's ever spoken so passionately about my American studies degree.
But it works for your books. It's fantastic. The research that you had to do to get behind all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
It works. I'm telling you, I turned the page and I was like, that's it. I'm reading this book from A to Z. It's all done. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that biography?
No, you covered it.
I nailed it. I'm good. So.
Great job.
That's right. So with all of our interviews, the first thing that we ask usually is, so how did you get into writing?
It's a good question. I don't really like remember a time when I wasn't writing, so I don't really know how to answer. I just kind of have always been just writing my whole life. I definitely, like, when I was a kid, I wrote a lot of, like, you know, Lord of the Rings fan fiction and posting that online, which is great, I think, as a writer, because if you write and post like a lot of fan fiction, you definitely get over people saying negative things about your writing at like a very young age. You know, I see a lot of people on like Twitter and Instagram, like a lot of authors like getting, you know, in their feelings about getting bad reviews. And I'm like, I've been getting bad reviews since I was 10 years old. So I'm over it by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I got really into like theater and stuff when I was in high school. And I wanted to get into playwriting. I have two undergrad degrees in addition to American studies. I also studied theater in college. Nice. So I did like playwriting and stuff in college, and then did a lot of comedy, actually, like a lot of improv comedy work and stuff like that. And then just decided, you know, I'm going to try to do screenwriting. So I went to grad school for screenwriting. And then I was like, I'm going to write a book. So I guess I just kind of like every few years, I'm like, I'm going to try a new thing. But yeah, that's been my writing career so far.
I love it.
I know.
I love that you tried everything a little
bit.
I mean,
yeah.
That's very
that cool. Way when they convert your book into a movie, you can
exactly, exactly. I can write it.
I like that too.
Right.
So how did you, when you were writing, let's say your first book,
mm-hmm.
did you write it A to Z? Did you finish it? Did you try getting an agent from it? How did that all go?
Yeah. So this book actually started as a screenplay. I wrote it as a screenplay my first semester of my MFA program. You like write a screenplay. The way they structure the program at USC is you like write a screenplay and then they teach you screenplay structure after you've kind of like already gotten something out. So then you like are not bogged down in thinking of the structure when you're like writing your first screenplay ever, basically. So it was like kind of pure inspiration in a way and not really structured appropriately, but I really liked the story. I kind of realized it wasn't the best screenplay maybe I shouldn't say that because I would love for somebody to, you know, turn this book into a movie. But I sort of felt like for a mystery, I think it's really helpful to have that kind of narrator voice, like be in the main character's head a little bit more than you can do in a screenplay effectively, to know very exactly what the main character knows, like what she's learning and what she's theorizing as, you know, each sequence happens. So after I graduated and I didn't get a job, I was like, I'll, you know, I have some time, maybe I'll try and turn that screenplay into a book finally. And so I did that. I took a few months to do that and then started querying agents and just signed with my agent just from a cold query.
Wow, that is so great.
Like that's, like we've interviewed quite a few authors. That's like, wow, that's really good. Do you have scripts or anything like that in your drawer that you'll never look at again, or that you started to write and you just said like, nope, that's not gonna work?
I don't know that I like would say, you know, I like never say never. I have one project. I actually started it as a play in undergrad. Well, actually, I guess you could say this almost started as a play in undergrad because I wrote a play set in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. The plot and the characters were totally different from this book, but I was already like interested in that world for a very long time. But I have another play that I wrote in undergrad that I then rewrote it as a play like a few years after I graduated. And then I rewrote it as a book actually during like the beginning of COVID, like early COVID. I was like, I'm gonna turn that play into a book. And then every time I like have some time, I like pull that up and I try to make it work and I really like it, but it doesn't seem to work. Ah. So, you know, maybe someday I'll make that work.
I'm okay with it. Yeah, absolutely. Like, let us know when. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I love the fact that you're talking about how you're doing fan fiction as a child.
Yeah.
So what was I'm assuming you loved Lord of the Rings. Were you into fantasy at that age or more history?
I was into Lord of the Rings. I mean, I guess I was into, you know, I was like a little less into like Harry Potter and like Narnia, like the kind of other worlds. For me, it was like Lord of the Rings was so fully developed as a world that, and I think this is like great for fan fiction writers, there's so many corners of that universe that you can like just find and explore that aren't like fully fleshed out in the actual books. You know, there's just stuff that's like hinted at in like the appendices and you're like, ooh, I can write. That was the kind of nerdy stuff that I was doing. It was like, not even like Lord of the Rings fiction, like Lord of the Rings, like appendices.
Nice.
And like the Silmarillion fan fiction. But yeah, I do think that that's like super helpful when you're like learning as a writer, because it kind of takes some of the elements away. You know, you already have like characters and like a world, and so you can focus on like writing dialogue, writing like a story arc, and you're not trying to spin as many plates as once.
So it was a good learning experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then also I do think like getting that kind of real-time feedback, I think it's so helpful as a writer to kind of get over yourself a little bit and like stop being so like precious about everything, and publishing like fan fiction and like updating your fan fiction every week. And you start to, you know, it's not that you don't care about what you're writing, but you get over that hurdle of like being afraid to put it out there in the world. Right. I guess.
And then you get feedback. So then you
right.
take that and then you know, explore where you need to work on and that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Or you can just start fights in the comments. Which is probably great. What I did.
That's right. Practice for Twitter. Awesome.
Exactly. Oh my God.
Oh, very cool. Okay, let's dive into The Woman with Two Shadows. First of all, how did you get interested in the Oak Ridge, Tennessee? And how much research did you have to do for all of it?
So I don't remember exactly how I got really interested in this world. I've always been like just a history buff. I honestly, when I first went into undergrad, I was considering studying history. I was undecided for like 2 years. So I've always been a fan of history and just been interested in that era of history. What really made me want to write about it was I was reading the writings of one of the scientists who worked at Oak Ridge and at Los Alamos. And he was talking about how after the Trinity test, everybody was so like happy and celebrating because they'd been working on this thing for so long and they did it and they made it successfully. And only one scientist working there was like quiet and like kind of morose about it. And he went up to him and he was like, what's wrong? Like, what are you sad about? And this scientist, it was Bob Wilson, said, you know, we've just made something really terrible. And I thought that was super interesting that all of these incredibly smart people, like people that we would call geniuses, just didn't, like they put the actual reality of what they were doing to the side because they were so engrossed in solving the puzzle and figuring out how to do the thing. So that's really what I wanted to explore in writing this book, is how somebody could be very smart and still lose sight of the bigger picture in a way.
Get into the science and lose the concept of all of it. Absolutely. And so you had to do a lot of, like, there's a lot of physics in the book.
Yeah.
So where did you get all that research?
Yeah. There's like a book that's like this big. It's called The Making of the Atomic Bomb. And it goes into like really in-depth detail. And that was really tricky, actually, because in the book, like the main character is a physicist. She's working with physicists. And I wanted their conversations to like plausibly read as high level physicist conversations, but also the readers are not high level physicists. Right. So you really have to like thread the needle of, I need this to be like understandable for somebody like me who did not take a single math class after the age of 17. But I also want to stay true to these characters and who they are. So I don't think I'm necessarily like the smartest person, but I'm a very like determined person. So I really just kind of forced my brain to understand how they built the atomic bomb and then just had to kind of distill it down in a way that I hope makes sense to people reading the book. I hope it's not too confusing, because there's a lot of the plot of the book revolves around like one of the main characters wants to have the atomic bomb be the igniter for an even bigger bomb. And that's the hydrogen bomb that eventually gets made in the 50s. And so you do have to like explain some science just for the plot to make sense, but that was tricky.
No, I think you struck the right chord. My daughter is a physicist. So when I started reading the book, I was like, that's really cool. And I'm a biologist, so I don't understand all the physics, but I do understand some of it. So, and I think that you walked the right line. Like, I think you explained just enough and you make your characters excited about it, which excites the readers. So then you're saying like, oh yeah, this is very cool. But when I read the equation that she's trying to solve for the Allerton, I was like, oh my goodness, like that doesn't even, it doesn't make sense to me.
I can like tell. So the Allerton test in the book is based on a real test. And I can't remember the name because it's been like 4 years since I read this. So I can't remember the name of the real test. But the real test publishes all of their problems online, and it's structured the same way as the test in the book. It's like 10 or like 6 questions over like an hour or whatever. And they publish all of their questions online. And I wanted so badly to use one of their questions. And I tried to like email them, like tried to get permission to use it in the book. And I just never got a response from anybody. So I had to use a public domain question. I found a public domain calculus textbook from like 1928. and I literally was like, because I took calculus in high school, but I'm like, I don't remember it. I just chose, I was like, I don't know if this is a difficult question or not. I have no idea.
It sounds difficult.
That's exactly what I did. I was like, honestly, I just chose the question that looked the most imposing. So I was like, that's what really matters. So like somebody who reads this book and really knows calculus might be like, this is a really easy question. I'm like, oh.
Chances are
I tried to get permission for a harder question. I couldn't. I even had to change some of the plot elements because I felt like when I was using like a real question from the test, I felt like this like would reasonably take like this long for somebody of like Lillian's mathematical ability to answer this question. But like for this, I was like, I have no idea. So I had to like kind of fuzz out some of the details of how long it takes her to solve the question.
Very cool. Like, I would, like, I almost thought that you knew somebody in your family or a close friend who was a physicist, because even some of the things that you say, like my daughter has said something like at one point, you, one of your characters says, so when did you change from math to physics? Because at one point math just gets boring and you figure out the physics is where you want to go. And I think that's such a physicist thing to say. Like, how did you even get to that?
That just came from reading like biographies of physicists, you know. Very that was cool. Something that I think I read in like multiple physicist biographies is that they all became really obsessed with math at like a very young age, and then eventually sort of realized physics was just like math applied. Applied. Yeah. And that was more interesting to them than kind of like the theory of mathematics. That they liked the reality of physics. So yeah, that's just like just reading just biographies. And that's something I had to do for Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen. Interestingly enough, there's a main character who's a musician in Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen. And so I had to read biographies of pianists. So I was I don't know how these people talk. Like, I just like need to know how they think, like how their brains work so that I can write their dialogue. So that's a really useful thing to do.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I never would have thought to do that. Just to make biographies of, you know, the historical figures that you want to write about, or even just in that genre too, just to figure out what they're like.
Yeah, just to like get in their head a little bit, I think is so helpful.
I love it. Now, one thing that I absolutely want to talk to you about is, I haven't read your second book, which like I will hang up and I will do that. But the one thing that I appreciate so much about your first book, The Woman with the Two Shadows, is how throughout even reading the book, you're never certain, even the main characters, whether they're good or bad. Like, and I think that that's great for me. Like, there's good and bad in every one of your characters.
Yeah.
And so how do you go about pulling that off? How do you characterize? How do you build your characters?
That's a good question. So I did not know when I wrote this book that I wrote a mystery until my agent told me. So when I submitted it to agents, the agent that I ended up signing with, she was like, I want to represent you, but I want to talk to you first, because if I'm going to send this book out, you need to do some rewrites to it. And the main thing she had was like, you need to kind of structure it a little bit more like a mystery. And I was like, well, but it's not a mystery. And she was like, well, yes, it is a mystery.
Love that.
Because in my mind, it was very clear from the beginning who did. Like, I think I don't know. I don't want to like get too spoilery here.
No.
People who haven't read it. But I felt like I made it very obvious. And so I don't really know how to answer that question. Because in my mind, I was like, well.
With the rewrites, is it now more just as obvious to you as before? Or is it more, you know, hidden?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say because like I'm in it. I will say I was just surprised that I heard from so many people that they were like, I didn't see the coming. I didn't have any idea. And I was like, oh my God, really? So, but I do think that it's useful as a writer to have that kind of like clarity about it, because you can plant things in such a way that it'll make sense to the reader. You know, you don't want it to be like a twist that's like, well, that doesn't make sense as a twist, you know? So the reader is just coming in fresh. And I think that brings a lot of the surprise element to it. But it is definitely like important to me. I think that the main characters especially are like not... because I just think it's boring to have like a main character who's entirely a good person. You know, I really wanted the main Lillian's journey in The Woman with Two Shadows to like, she's like kind of like an ornery person, you know, I mean, she's still ornery by the end, but she's like kind of grown up a little bit and learned a lot about herself. And I do think that's important to have in a main character.
Yeah. So let me get to it a different way.
Are you
a plotter or a pantser? Like, did you write this with an outline in mind or did you just go for it?
Well, when I wrote the screenplay, I will say I didn't know, like I kind of knew like the broad strokes of the story when I started, but I didn't really know how it ended until I kind of got to the scene where I was writing the ending and I was like, this is what makes sense as an ending. But that was like the so early on draft. You know, when I was working on the book and adapting it from the screenplay that I had written, I'd already kind of had the structure laid out, I guess. Yeah.
So basically the screenplay became the album.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. The screenplay, interestingly enough, the book like kind of has this like B story that's like a bit in flashback. Mm-hmm. And the screenplay didn't have that. That was all like added in later because the screenplay only ended up being like about like 50,000 words of book. So I needed to kind of flesh out the story a little bit more in that way.
And those are some of the most interesting parts of the book.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It really, I think it worked out well. I think.
Oh no, it totally did.
Yeah.
So did you do the same thing with your second book? So did you start with an outline or did you start with an idea and just go from there?
The second book was completely unlike anything I've ever written before because I wrote that book on contract. So when I sold the first book, I had a 2-book contract deal. So, and I've never had to write anything on that tight of a deadline before. It was so hard. Yeah. It was so hard. So what I ended up doing was basically I had like, cause I had pitched ideas to source books and they were like, we like this one, write that one. And what I had was like a paragraph and I wrote the book like based on that and just kind of like went for it.
Wow.
And I spent a lot of time before I started writing, planning out the characters. Mm-hmm. Cause I knew that book, I was like going into it. I was like, I'm not going to get tricked. This one's a mystery. So I like planned out all the characters and was like, here's like, you know, their potential motive. Here's their alibi, you know, here's their, like all of that information for all the characters. But then I didn't really plan out the plot too much. I just kind of went for it. And it was a similar thing. Like when writing the screenplay for the first book, I didn't really know the ending until I was like 2/3 of the way through. And I was like, well, this is the ending that makes sense. And then I ended up changing the ending later. So
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I'm like kind of like a, I don't know. Every project is different for me. I don't have like one set way that I, you know, either plan or I don't, I never heard that before. Plan or pants.
Pants or plotter.
Pants or planter. Yeah. I guess I'm a mix of both. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I do think it's more fun for me to not have a plan. Mm-hmm. Like when I have a really like tight outline, then it just kind of feels like more work for me than like creativity, you know?
Yeah.
But so writing is work.
So for the third book, is it also under contract?
The third book I sold like independently of the other two. But it was, you know, not written when I sold it. I did have to, this time I had more than like a paragraph because I had to write like a 2-page like kind of synopsis. Mm-hmm. And like the first 3 chapters, I think. So that was what I had going for the second book. And that was, writing that 2-page synopsis was probably harder than writing the entire book for me. Oh, wow. Because to try to like, especially with a mystery, you basically have to write a full outline and then condense it down to 2 pages. Like there's not really another way to do it. I found, because it was so, I agonized so much over that 2-page. So I did have like more to go on with the second book. I actually just finished, or the third book. Sorry. I actually just finished it and turned it in a few weeks ago. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. And my process for that was I wrote about 2/3 of a draft, realized I had made a huge problem for myself very early on in the beginning. And it was like one of those things, it's like such a minor change, but it ripples through the entire story, you know? So I had to basically start over, but I re-outlined and then wrote the I guess second draft or first and a half draft from a full outline. But I had such a full outline because I'd already written most of a first draft at that point.
And so was the, when you had to rewrite it, did you have to send it back to your editor?
My editor had not seen it at all at that point. Yeah. So I had just written, you know, they were like, okay, great. Send it to us by March. So I wrote like 2/3 of a draft and then was like, this isn't going to work. And I spent like 2 weeks rewriting the outline and then like 2 months just kind of going from the outline. Mm-hmm. And then I sent it to the editor. Yeah.
That sounds like that was a plotted book, because if you've written it,
yes,
outline,
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Very, more so than anything I've ever written.
Mm-hmm. So the second book is in the 40s as well.
Yes.
So is the third book?
Yes.
Let's get the dish on all the like.
Yes. All the gossip. Yeah. The second book, I actually pitched it in the 20s and Sourcebooks was like, we want it in World War II. And I was like, okay, but I'm not going to change the plot. So like World War II is just kind of like also happening. It's not really about World War II.
But it's there. So we're good.
It's going on. Yeah. I think it's funny because the first one, they put like the subtitle is like a novel of World War II.
Yes, yeah.
And then this second one, the subtitle is just a novel.
A novel.
They were like, we can't.
I just love that now you've been like typecasted into like the 40s. Yeah. Going down in the background. And
my third one is also old Hollywood too. It's like also, so I guess that's my niche now. There's more World War II in the third one.
You know, Sarah, I'm okay with you being like niched in that. It's all good. Like,
It is very fun for me because I love writing dialogue. It's maybe my favorite thing to write. And it's, you know, when you get old Hollywood, you can get so much like kind of like snappy, like dialogue, like one-liners, and it's really fun and fun to write for me.
Ooh, nice. I love it. Love it. Okay. So what else can you tell us about the third book?
It's about, so Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen is about, this place called the Hollywood Canteen, which was like a club for servicemen in Los Angeles that they could go to. It was staffed exclusively by volunteers who worked in the movie industry. So a lot of film stars, music stars, they would like come and like dance with the servicemen or like perform for them. And that was like just one of the ways in which Hollywood was supporting the war effort and also doing PR for themselves. Like, look at how much we're supporting the war effort. Another thing that Hollywood did to support the war effort was there was a train called the Hollywood Victory Caravan. And it was like a cross-country train journey where like all these stars went and performed in different cities to sell war bonds. Okay. So the book three is what if somebody got murdered on that train?
It's like Murder on the Orient Express. This is so
cool. Yeah. So that's, and it's basically like Joan Crawford has to solve the murder.
Oh, wow. I can't wait. When is it slated to come out?
We don't have a date yet, but probably like spring or summer of next year.
Ooh, you have to come back for that one.
Oh yeah, come back. We will definitely. Okay. That's so cool. Oh my God, I cannot wait. I just love when you find an author and that you just like fall in love with their stories and their, you know, like the way that they're writing. Like it's, everything's just perfect right now. Like just don't stop whatever you're doing. Just don't stop.
Okay.
So where do you get your ideas for all these books?
That's hard. That's hard to say. I guess like just doing research is the, you know, the best thing that you can do, because some of the research that I did for Woman with Two Shadows was in the B story, there's like this plot line about the musical Carousel. Mm-hmm. And which is so funny to me as like, you know, like the Atomic Bomb book has like a plot line about Carousel.
I never thought of it that way, but okay.
it makes me laugh because I'm such a theater kid. It's like, that's, of course I put that in there. But I read the autobiography of one of the producers of like Carousel, and they started this, God, so, this is like just so in the weeds, you know. She was a member of this theater group that was started with like her and five of her friends started this like theater company, and they really wanted to produce shows that were both like artistic and commercial. That was like the niche that they wanted to fill in like the New York theater scene at that time. And they like kind of invented like the modern musicals. Like she was the one who like told like Rodgers and Hammerstein to be like, hey, there's this play, I think you could turn it into a musical and call it Oklahoma. And that like concept of six friends trying to like make art eventually became Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen, because there's this group of friends in the book and they are all like, they're like a really close-knit group of friends, but they're all artists in some way, and they're all like unsatisfied with their careers and where their lives have taken them as artists, but they're all like very close friends, but they all kind of hate each other a little bit, but they all love each other. And that dynamic was what I really wanted to explore in the book. So that was like the first thing I started with, was like a friend group and like their kind of toxic dynamic. And I wanted to set it in the 1920s. I wanted it to be like an Algonquin round table kind of surrogate story. Then Sourcebook said no. So I actually found out about the Hollywood Canteen at the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles. They have like an exhibit on like LA history, and they had like a little like some information about the Hollywood Canteen. And I was like, well, what if I just put that story there? Nice. And then it's technically a World War II story. So I think just like, you know, and then I found out about the Hollywood Victory Caravan while doing research for this book. So it's just kind of being curious and like reading everything, whether you think it's going to lead to anything or not. You know, like there was absolutely no reason I needed to read the autobiography of the producer of Carousel to write that B plot in my first book. But you know, I just was curious and I did it anyway. And you never know what you're going to find when you kind of go down rabbit holes like that. It's like the same like instinct as like just kind of clicking on random Wikipedia articles for hours on end.
I've never done that, but that sounds really cool.
Oh my God. It's so much fun. Just go to like, honestly, you know, like they have that feature on Wikipedia. It's like random article of the day. Just click on that and then you can just like click anything that interests you, and it'll be 2 hours later and you're like deep in the weeds on like, what color is Belle's dress? Is it gold or yellow?
There's
like a Wikipedia page on that.
For a writer, like that's a great way of getting out of like, you know, like a slump where you can't figure out what
you're
doing. Like, I think you just solved half the writer's problems right there.
Like, you really did. God, I never even thought to do that. That would be fun.
That would be fun, actually. Yeah. Like, just take the first three articles, mush them together, and that becomes your story.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's really cool.
It's better than getting sucked into cat videos on YouTube.
So. Yes.
Right? Oh, God. Learn something.
We do not need another cat video. No, we do not. I love asking this question of all the authors that we have, and what's the one single thing that you've done as an author that you think was the most important to your career?
Oh God, I don't know.
Is there one thing, like, is it a series?
I mean, I don't think my career is like good enough to give me that kind of advice. Oh. You know,
you have an agent, you have two books out, you have a third one coming out. That's more than a lot of writers out there.
Yeah, I guess. Oh man. I mean, I do think, like, for me, like, grad school gets like, you know, shat on a lot, because it is expensive, and that is true, and I am still paying off those loans.
Right.
Joe Biden, call me. That's right. But I do think having what I did get that was fortunately priceless was a community of other writers. And I think that's one of the most important things you can do for yourself as a writer, is to have a solid group chat where you can vent your frustrations, a solid group of friends that you can come over for wine and like discuss your plot holes. You know, that's, I think, the most important thing.
So did they become like your critique group too?
Yeah. They, there were a lot of things that I was kind of scared to do in Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen. I was like, not sure how the editors would react to it, how readers would react to it. And my writing group was the one that was like, no, just do it. Just put this, I guess I can say what it is. I don't know why I'm being mysterious, because it's like revealed on the first page of the book. There's a throuple in Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen. Mm-hmm. And I was like nervous to do that. I like wanted to do that, but I was like, I don't know how people are going to react to that. And my writing group was like, no, you want to do it. Just have a throuple. And I was like, okay. So I did it. And I'm so glad I did. Awesome. That.
I love that.
Yeah. I love that they supported you and, you know, and just follow your own instincts. Like, this is what you, this is what you wanted to write. And just having them be able to back you up and say, yeah, you know what? Go ahead, do it.
And it is nice to have, because I do think if it was a situation where like it felt like I was just trying to force that in and it didn't make sense for the book, I think they would have said that, you know, like they would have been like, no, that's not, it's not thematically right. It doesn't make sense. You just want to put that in there for your own amusement. So don't do that. But
if it made sense for you. Yeah. Like that's when it makes sense.
So do they read your writing, I mean, as you write it, or do they read the book after it's done? Or is it just more of you guys get together and talk about, you know,
what? It's more like we meet, like we try and meet like once a month. We don't, but you know, we meet when we can. And usually I just send in like a few chapters of like what else. So like, I think they read like maybe like the first like six chapters or so of Hollywood Canteen. And then for Woman with Two Shadows, because I wrote that screenplay so much in grad school, I got a lot of feedback like from my actual classmates on like the scenes and characters and the plot then.
Very cool. Well, can't thank you enough for sharing everything about your writing and your, like, I mean, I'm impressed with the amount of research that you do to write these books. It's fantastic. And it shows because like the characters are feel real, the situations feel real, everything. So thank you so much. We are going to go now to what we call the speed round, where I ask you 10 questions that are maybe get to know you a little bit better. They're very simple. You can answer with one word questions, yes, no, paragraphs, whatever, however you want to answer is fine with us. So are you ready?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The first one is, where is your favorite place to write?
I mean, it changes. I go through phases. I'm like a cat. You know how like a cat will like sleep on one spot for like 2 weeks and then never, ever sleep there ever again. So that's true. How I am with writing. So I wrote like most of my last book at, I'm in my kitchen right now. I wrote most of my third book here at the kitchen table. I wrote a lot of last night at the Hollywood Canteen at the Los Angeles Public Library. Nice. And that was great because I, in the art and music and recreation department, because then I could just go over to the biographies of pianists whenever I needed them. I write a lot in coffee shops. So it just kind of changes depending on the week.
I love it. So I think it's cool. Yeah. Especially like if you're looking for a different atmosphere with your book, it's kind of cool to go to a different place. So
I like Yeah, totally. And I think it helps to like kind of shake things up, or at least it helps me to like be in a different environment than usual. I think it like kind of shakes something loose in my brain.
Yeah. And it's not quite as isolating as if you're just sitting in your room writing on the computer every single day, you know, day in, day out, that you can
totally. And I work from home most of the time, like at my day job. And so like to like work from home all day and then sit there at night and then write from home, that can get like a little depressing sometimes.
That is a lot. The second question is, would you rather cook dinner or do the dishes?
Cook. I hate doing the dishes. I hate it. It's my doing the dishes and vacuuming are the tasks that I will put off until I absolutely cannot put it off anymore because I hate doing it.
I totally agree with you. If you could jump into any book, which one would it be?
Probably. Well, I mean, I know I already mentioned Tana French on this book, but so Tana French has like another series of books called The Dublin Murder Squad. Mm. And it's just all these incredible Irish detectives and they're solving crimes. I would like to be like an Irish detective.
Oh, very cool.
Solving crimes.
I like it. Do you prefer sunrises or sunsets?
Sunset. I'm not trying to get out that early to see the sunrise. We started at 10 a.m. my time, and that was a little too early for me.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's, I was ambitious. It was like 9:30 and I was like, well, I guess I should get out of bed.
I was like, I can sleep in for once. Yay.
That's right. Weekends. Kind of nice. Would you rather explore the deep ocean or outer space?
Outer space. No, the ocean is all due respect to James Cameron, but he should not be going down there. There's nothing. No.
Totally agree. Especially with the last one, the sub that just like,
vanished. Absolutely like, not. There's nothing down there that's good for us.
I totally agree with you. Would you rather, where would you go on your dream vacation?
Oh, I really like cities. Like I'm very into like urbanism and how cities function around the world. So honestly, like any major city would be the answer for me. I'm so interested in how cities operate.
I love how you're so curious. And I think that's what makes your book so good. Like you do research, you're curious. Like, I think that's great. It's fantastic. What do you wish you could spend less time on?
Working for money. Yeah,
that would be really good.
I don't even spend that much time on it.
I know. It would be nice if we could like somehow create a society where you could do what you wanted and not what you had to do.
It'd be great.
Yeah, that's our next book, Angie. Here we go.
Okay.
Do you cannonball into the pool or dip your toes in first?
Oh, dip my toes in. I'm such a chicken. I also don't really like to be cold, you know? So yeah. Like, I need to test the waters and not.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
I know. Like, it's like an inch at a time. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how anxious would you be if you were without your smartphone for a day?
It sounds nice.
Okay, that's not where I thought this question was going.
God, it sounds like such a relief. I don't know. I guess I would be pretty anxious. This is like the worst thing about like getting older is I have like older parents now. And I'm like, oh God, what if somebody's in the hospital? You know, like that's, you know, constant worries now. So I guess I would be pretty anxious. But on the other hand, I would be like, oh, freedom.
You don't have to check emails, don't have to check texts, it's all good.
Yeah, or like don't have to, I get so sucked into like Instagram reels, like that's my, you know, and they just show me like kittens and I'm like, yeah, I want to see more. And then an hour has gone by. And
I know, especially when you're anxious about something, it's the best. Like, it takes the anxiety away. It's a little too easy.
I just found this app where, you know, I'm like, I have a farm and a city and I'm like building the city and the farm and like, and I'm obsessed.
You have to throw that one away, Angie. Oh my God.
I'm in first place right now.
I'm telling you, dump it. Your life will be more simple. Because like, I was like every hour going like, oh, I have to push a button so that I can get corn in an hour. No.
Yeah, that's right now my corn is growing. It is growing.
I'm telling you, dump it. Dump it.
By the time this interview is over. I'm ready to send to the other countries.
That's too funny. And the last question, which is always like the most intellectual one, is TV reality show Real Housewives, yay or nay?
I've never watched it.
Oh, good for you. I mean, neither of us.
one of my good friends is a producer on it, so I guess I'm
yay.
So, yeah.
But thank you so much for answering those questions. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Stay tuned so Sarah can read the back cover of her novel.
I'm Sarah James. I'm the author of Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen. And here's the quick summary. Perhaps the best place in 1943 Hollywood to see the stars is the Hollywood Canteen, a club for servicemen staffed exclusively by those in show business. Murder mystery playwright Annie Lawrence, new in town after a devastating breakup, definitely hopes to rub elbows with the right stars. Maybe then she can get her movie made. But Hollywood proves to be more than tinsel and glamour. When despised film critic Fiona Ferris is found dead in the canteen kitchen, Annie realizes that any one of the canteen's luminous volunteers could be guilty of the crime. To catch the killer, Annie falls in with Fiona's friends, a bitter and cynical group, each as uniquely unhappy in their life and career as Annie is in hers, that call themselves the Ambassadors Club. Solving a murder in real life, it turns out, is a lot harder than writing one for the stage. And by involving herself in the secrets and lies of the Ambassadors Club, Annie just might have put a target on her own back. Last Night at the Hollywood Camp.
Yeah, so can you tell us where people can find you on the internet?
Sure. I'm on Instagram at @the_SarahJames. I was off Twitter and I reactivated it this morning to start a fight with somebody. So I guess follow me on Twitter @CryingBaseball. Hopefully between recording and the time this comes out, I will get my head screwed back on straight and I'll deactivate that again. But if not, you can find me there.
But we thank you for joining us today. And if you enjoyed this video, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell. We really just want to thank Sarah for coming on.
So much for coming. We had a great time with you. We loved learning about your writing journey and about you. Can't thank you enough. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Looking forward to reading everything that you write.
Great, thanks for having me.
Hurry up and click on one of the boxes on the screen so you can watch our next video or go to a playlist.